Tight budget have you going out less? Stretch your entertainment dollars by visiting a library in the newly formed Mountain Library Network. One car travels with you to libraries in 16 West Virginia counties. Stop by a participating library to sign up for your new card and to check out the benefits. Many libraries, one card does it all.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here's your forecast from the Weather Channel. Scattering of showers during this evening will give way to a partially clear after midnight sky with a low around 44. Seems a little chilly for April, but nonetheless, April is a month of change, so we'll anticipate improvements after sunrise tomorrow. A Saturday high of 63 feels pretty good with a mix of clouds and sunshine. Clear 42 tomorrow night, becomes 72, mainly sunny by Sunday afternoon, and the next chance of rain not until Tuesday.
The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight's Head On with Bob Pinkin. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, we're working for you now. Bob Pinkin.
Hey, good evening. Six and a half minutes and counting past 7 o'clock. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. A little drizzly outside, but that's okay because I got to tell you, I'm sort of halfway bummed out, tired, worn out with the infernal shenanigans of our legislature. Really didn't know where I was going to go this evening when I got behind the microphone. But then, well, then, it's kind of like a miracle. After all, our glorious dear leader, isn't that what they call Kim Jong-wak in North Korea? Yeah, dear leader came home from the funeral today, George Bush did, and had some remarks on the plane. And just when you think this guy couldn't get any dumber, he does, of course. Talking about the Pope's funeral, George W. Dumber than a Bag of Hammers said, "This will be speaking about attending the funeral." Said, "This will be one of the highlights of my presidency." Leave it to George Bush to think that the celebration of a death is the highlight of his presidency. One particular passing on. Never mind the 100,000 that he directly caused in Iraq. Maybe there are highlights too. But I read on, and you can see it for yourself. If you doubt me, you can see it for yourself. It's at the top of the list. If you go to whitehouse.gov, George's remarks aboard Air Force One. A little ways down into the discussion, one of the reporters asked him, he said, "I noticed you had your glasses on during the homily." He said, were you reading the English translation, the guide that was given out? He said, and George said, "Well, I was trying to follow, you know, my Spanish isn't so good. It sort of helped me with the Italian." And then went on to, and the reporter then said, "Well, had you ever been to a Latin mass?" "Nope, never been to a Latin mass." Note the verb tense. Not, "I had never been to a Latin mass until today." Or, "This was my first Latin mass." "Never been to one." They told him the homily was in Italian, and he thought the whole darn thing was. This man is amazing in his ability to shame our once great nation.
Nope, never been to no Latin mass.
Never mind that he sat through one today, 3 hours worth.
Ain't never been to no Latin mass.
Oh, my heavenly days. It's... Go look at it. Don't doubt me. Doubt me. What do I care? Go look at it.
Never been to Latin mass.
Before? Until today? Until I went to Rome? Nope.
Never been to a Latin mass.
This guy barely knows he's in the world. I'm surprised he didn't say it was hard work. And you just, you simply have to ask yourself, is there an end? Is there an end to his deliberate, bug-eyed, jug-eared, loudish, ignorant, foolish? What? I mean, I'm struggling. I read this and I remember being a kid and getting my first bite of horseradish. And you know how it kind of just grabs hold of your whole head and you kind of go, oh, can't breathe. That's what I got reading the transcript of George W. Peanut Brain's remarks about the funeral. And then he has to edit himself as he goes. Pope John Paul will have a clear legacy of peace, compassion, and strong legacy of setting a clear moral tone. And then he comes back and says, a clear and excellent legacy, if you don't mind adding the word excellent. Like adding the word excellent would somehow make him appear maybe 2 or 3 cents worth less outrageously stupid.
Ain't never been no Latin mass.
Now, I would define Pope John Paul II as a clear thinker who was like a rock. Well, you know where he got that one. The commercial stick in his head. He heard a Chevrolet truck commercial somewhere. Like a rock. He was a man like a rock. Or did he mean, or is this a transcription error, and he meant that he was a man like Iraq? We simply can't know. I mean, I suppose if you put one of those brainwave monitor things on his head, you know, what? Nothing. He is a truly great man who is and will always be a great historical figure. Oh, God. Oh, God, why have you done this to us? Oh, how did we displease you that you would subject us to a creep like this? My heavenly days.
Ain't never been Latin mass. Latin. I studied up on my Latin when I went to Latin America.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Dan Quayle. Curiously, though, out of all this, you might find this interesting. This was emailed to me, and I appreciate it. An article from the Catholic New Times dated May 18th, 2003, referencing an article by a fellow named Wayne Madsen, who says that in the years prior to his death, Pope John Paul II had wondered to his close associates whether George W. Bush might be the Antichrist. Now, you know, on this program, we've read through Revelations chapter 13 about the wound to the head and how he miraculously survives. And, you know, we saw the wound to the head when he got attacked by the demon terrorist Al-Qaeda pretzel. You can find, I don't have the website here, but according to freelance journalist Wayne Madsen, George W. Bush's bloodlust, his repeated commitment to Christian beliefs, and his constant references to evildoers in the eyes of many devout Catholic leaders bear all the hallmarks of the one warned about in the book of Revelations, the Antichrist. People close to the Pope claim that amid these concerns, the pontiff wishes he was younger. Like I said, this is from 2003. The pontiff wishes he was younger and in better health to confront the possibility that Bush may represent the person prophesied in Revelations.
Wow.
The Pope worked tirelessly to convince leaders of nations on the UN Security Council to oppose Bush's war resolution in Iraq. Vatican sources claim they had not seen the Pope more animated and determined since he fell ill to Parkinson's disease.
Huh.
How about that? Oh, well, well.
I've never been to a Latin Mass.
It's just stunning, isn't it? It's just stunning. Let's take a break. When we come back, some comments from someone else about George W. Pinhead. Interesting stuff. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Too much at the pump? Is your monthly gas budget more expensive than your car payment?
Jeez!
If so, 40 miles per gallon on the highway must sound like a dream come true. Well, time to wake up and get to L&S Toyota. 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. We've got 35 Corollas available. And with 40 miles per gallon on the highway, that makes Corolla one of the most fuel-efficient cars on the road.
Yes! 40 miles per gallon.
All right! And Corollas aren't the only Toyotas that will give you more bang for your buck in the pump. Choose from 25 available Camrys with 33 miles to the gallon and 49 available Tacomas with 27 miles to the gallon. You won't just save money on your car, you'll save big on your gas bill with 35 Corollas, 25 Camrys, and 49 Tacomas available. What else can you ask for? L&S Toyota.
This is www.toyota.com. Sale ends 4/31.
Where there's a tornado,
where there's a forest fire,
where Mother Nature is at her worst,
oh, yeah. Where there's a search,
where there's a rescue,
where there are Americans in need,
where there
disaster strikes,
or one volunteer for us,
helping each other and simply doing what needs to be done.
You are the Civil Air Patrol,
the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force.
To join, call 1-800-FLY-2338
or log on to the World Wide Web at www.cap.gov.
For many Americans, the dream of owning a home is out of reach because they lack a down payment. What most Americans don't know is that there are grants available from a nonprofit organization that cover your down payment and closing costs. Plus, the grants have no geographic and minimal income restrictions. If you want to turn your next rent payment into your first mortgage payment, call 1-866-NO-DOWN-P. That's 1-866-NO-DOWN-P. Or visit us online at www.neighborhoodgold.com.
WWNR Beckley.
Shining a little light in the conservative darkness. Bob Kincaid. Head On.
Welcome back. 18 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. It's not just me out here hammering George Bush. God knows he deserves it. His former professor has weighed in an article on the, in the Harvard Crimson, a professor of merit, a professor of intelligence, a professor of great study, Yoshi Tsurumi, writes, 30 years ago, President Bush was my student at Harvard Business School. Listen carefully. In my class, he called former President Franklin D. Roosevelt, class of 1904, a socialist, and spoke against Social Security, unemployment insurance, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and other New Deal innovations. He refused to understand, not was incapable of understanding, refused. This is the, you know, this is the definition of pig-headedness. He refused to understand that capitalism becomes corrupt without democratic civic values and ethical restraints. How do you feel about that? Now, this is firsthand testimony from a man who sat there and heard it said. George W. Bush called Franklin Delano Roosevelt a socialist. The man who led us through the Second World War. The man who arguably created the up until now growing and respectable modern Western civilization. And he was a socialist. Now, you add this to the story we had a couple of months back about the fact that in 1978, when he was running for Congress, He said, wow, the Social Security will be bankrupt in 10 years. This guy is a rank, radical, right-wing, fascist ideologue who will say anything and do anything and destroy anything that gets in the way of his worship of money. And it makes me sick. Professor Surumi goes on to say, Bush is the first president of the United States with a Master's of Business Administration, yet he epitomizes the worst aspects of America's business education. To privatize Social Security, he is peddling a colossal lie about its solvency. Furthermore, Bush, along with today's business aristocrats, shows no compassion for working Americans, robbing them to benefit big business and the very rich. This is the guy who taught at Harvard. You know, he spent his time teaching little rich kids. Last year, due to Bush's tax cuts, over 80 of America's most profitable 200 corporations did not pay even a penny of their federal and state income taxes. Not a penny. Do you agree with that? I mean, you have to pay your taxes. I've got to pay my taxes. They'll come and get us. State and federal income taxes, on the other hand, on the part of 80 of America's most profitable 200 corporations. Why bother? We don't need it. It's not important. Not good for business. And Professor Surumi also says something that's rather telling. He says, to justify the robber baron culture, America's business educators and economists falsely cite their demigod of laissez-faire market economics, Adam Smith, you know, The Wealth of Nations, 1776. Little do they know that Adam Smith, in fact, scathingly castigated Bush's type of government, business collusion and unfair taxes. Walmart's exploitations of labor and communities, and robber barons' hubris. Nowhere in his 900-page book, The Wealth of Nations, does Smith even imply that those who knowingly harm others and society in their pursuit of personal greed also benefit their society. He rejects the notion that a corporation exists to make money without ethical constraints. Well, you know, what do you want? These right-wing Republicans, they didn't read the book. 900 pages? Come on! They got the Cliff's Notes or, you know, read a blurb on the Internet. Business good, regulation bad. You know, and that's enough of Adam Smith for them. But he, Professor Surumi, references the issue of the Social Security matter. This is just beautiful. Stand by one second. The FDR Library. Did you know there was an FDR Library? Yeah, the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Library is administered by the National Archive. And, you know, being as how it's the FDR Library, they had this crazy idea that they would have a little discussion about the Social Security piratization plans. Guess what? Well, back up a little more detail. The FDR Library in Hyde Park, New York, is administered by the National Archives and Records Administration. So it is technically, I guess, a part of the executive branch. So a coalition of women's organizations wanted to hold a Social Security forum at the FDR Library, Hyde Park, New York, like I told you. And they oppose Bush's plans to piratize Social Security. Don't you just despise a thief? The National Archives and Records Administration contacted the FDR Library and said, no soap, won't wash, can't do it, not allowed. Who needs a First Amendment anyway? Here's what they told the people planning the group, planning the forum. Quote, if you cannot provide at least one speaker who will speak on the features and merits of the administration's plans for Social Security, then I must ask you to find another venue for your program. And that was from Library Director Cynthia M. Koch, or Cook. Changes to the Social Security system are now the president's highest priority on his domestic agenda in Congress. Therefore, in order to be in compliance with the Hatch Act, I must require you to present a program that is balanced in presenting both sides of the Social Security debate.
This is the library of FDR, the father of Social Security.
And they will squelch free speech even there. This is, I mean, this makes your head want to just go buzz and spin around. Because I haven't noticed on George W. Dipsticks, multi-state, multi-day, zipping around the country, touting his nasty little pyramid scheme. I haven't noticed anybody standing up with him promoting an opposing viewpoint. Oh, and by the way, wasn't one of his last dirty little appearances over at the Bureau of the Public Debt in Parkersburg? You know the one where he stood up and disavowed the United States obligation under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution to honor its debts?
Now, these are just IOUs.
Of course, that's commensurate with his attitude toward debt. You remember Harkin Energy, don't you? Spectrum 7 Energy, where time after time after time after time after time he took other people's money, used it to his own gain, and then left them holding the bag. Of course. Mercy. If you cannot provide at least one speaker who will speak on the features and merits of the administration, where is at least one speaker who will speak on the features and merits of not ripping off America every time George Bush charges us umpty gazillion dollars to fly off to Podunk to tout this stupid scheme? And you wonder sometimes when I tell you that we are living in the midst of a fascist dictatorship. Guess what, sunshine? We are. My God. Oh, my God. This man's flimsy little scheme for ripping off our future is so weak that it can't even stand up in debate. They have to cheat to try to pass it off on unsuspecting, unwary, occasionally trusting, certainly often undereducated, uninformed Americans. And they have even muzzled speech at the library founded by the man who saved countless thousands and hundreds of thousands of elderly Americans with the initiation of Social Security. What do you think of that? Are you okay with that? I mean, do we just shut down debate? Just shut up the other side? Oh, well, if you can't, you know, what is this? Who's this library director? Thumper's mother?
If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Oh, my aching back. Let's take our bottom of the hour break. I'm Bob. This is Head On.
This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A Fayette County man remains in serious condition after an accident on his motorcycle Wednesday night. Sheriff's deputies say Ronald Blaine Smith of Mount Hope was traveling south on State Route 41 near Leyland when he apparently ran off the road. Witnesses say Smith went over the end and the bike came down on top of him. Smith was health netted to CAMC. His condition today updated from critical to serious. Deputies say Smith was wearing a helmet. The accident remains under investigation by the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. The House of Delegates will vote today, or rather the House of Delegates voted today on a bill that would allow insurance companies to drop homeowners, increase rates on businesses without prior approval, and pay out less than a policy's face value in some cases. State Insurance Commissioner Jane Klein says Senate Bill 30 would ultimately lower rates for West Virginia consumers and employers. West Virginia's largest teacher union is getting a new leader. Next month, members of the West Virginia Education Association will vote for a new president. Current President Tom Lang is stepping down at the end of his current term on June 15th. The State Ethics Commission has dismissed an ethics complaint against former State Senator Mike Ross. The commission says Ross did not benefit directly from a deal in which he voted to spend state funds that would promote a golf tournament on a course with financial ties to his company. West Virginia Supreme Court has agreed to consider an appeal of a ruling that upheld Charleston's $1 a week service fee. By a 4-1 vote, the justices decided today to consider if a Kanawha County Circuit judge was correct when he ruled last year that the fee was not a tax because its purpose is to pay for services and not to fund government. For the rest of this evening, partly cloudy, temperatures in the mid-50s. Tonight, cloudy, then becoming partly cloudy and cooler. Low near 40. Tomorrow and Sunday, sunny both days. Tomorrow's high near 62 and Sunday's high near 70. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I'm Jesse Russell.
Maryland is on track to be the first state in the nation to tax Walmart for failing to provide adequate health insurance coverage for its workers. Versions of the Fair Share Health Care Act have passed both the Maryland House and Senate, but the bill has not yet made it through both houses. Since Walmart employees often qualify for state health care programs for low-income uninsured workers, the state wants Walmart to stop shifting the cost of its workers' health care to taxpayers. Ann Healy, a Democrat in Maryland's House of Delegates, is chief sponsor of the bill.
Maryland has always been a progressive state. I think this is cutting edge, and it's very important. And if we can succeed with this in Maryland, it can be a model for the whole country.
Opponents of the bill fear that Walmart won't locate a big warehouse in Maryland should the state require Walmart to pay 8% of its payroll for workers' health care. But Delegate Healy says unless Walmart becomes a good corporate citizen, Maryland doesn't want it doing business there.
I don't think we want companies that are unwilling to provide a decent living to the people that they hire. We want companies that are going to maintain the quality of life and the quality of our economy in Maryland.
Healy says there are enough votes to override a threatened veto of this bill by Maryland's Republican governor.
Organizers are attempting to expand New Haven, Connecticut's living wage ordinance. Currently, the ordinance, implemented in 1997, requires city contractors to pay their employees a living wage that increases annually. The expansion, which may soon be heading for the Board of Aldermen, would require the same from businesses that receive $100,000 or more in city assistance. Employers would also be required to start paying health benefits or an additional $1.50 per hour. The living wage is currently set at $11.10 per hour.
The Farm Labor Organizing Committee is joining with AFSCME to support farm worker union organizing in the Upper Midwest. Farm Labor Organizing Committee President Baldemar Velasquez says that undocumented workers should be legalized, and he says that will strengthen the labor movement.
You're going to build the labor movement by allowing the immigrant workers to come into the unions and organize them every bit as much as the CIO did, contrary to what the policies of the AFL were when they created the CIO.
Velasquez says union organizers need to take a lesson from the past.
We got to go back to thinking like the original labor organizers in this country. You know, they didn't ask what country you came from. They just asked which side are you on.
Farm workers have made great strides since the 1980s, including a major victory in the Mount Olive Pickle campaign last year. Here's today's Dow Bob report. Employment trends are up, which may signal an end to the jobless recovery. The Economic Policy Institute says blacks still lag behind in the job market. Blacks are faring far worse now than they did in a 1990s recovery from recession. The overall unemployment rate is down slightly now, but for blacks, it's up nearly a full percentage point. In the first quarter of this year, the black unemployment rate was 10.6%, twice the overall jobless level.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR Beckley.
Here's Bob Kincaid, Head On.
Minutes before 8 o'clock. The phone number here, of course, 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. You can listen live on the internet. Many of you do. WWNRNewsTalk620.com. And you'll want to use that 800 number if you're so far away that you have to listen on the internet. And, of course, email to bob@headonradio.com. Jump in on the message boards there if you feel the urge as well. Pretty zany and occasionally downright brutal conversation. This story from the Associated Press. Now, we've talked about the fact that George Bush's rating among the American people is dropping like a paralyzed falcon. Interestingly, though, Congress, too, is taking a whipping. The Republican Congress, 37% of Americans have a favorable impression of the Republican Congress. I'm amazed that it's that high. But again, as we've discussed it before, there's a certain core of people who, I think they're wonderful, especially that godly man, Tom DeGlay. He is a wonderful man of Jesus. This is according to an AP Ipsos poll. In January, Bush was at 49%, while Congress was at 41%. Now he's down to 44%. 54% of the American people outright despising the job he's doing. Again, amazing that it's that low. The number of people supporting Bush's handling of domestic issues dipped. And this is March to April, dipped to 42% for the economy, 38% for issues like education and health care. Ain't never been in a Latin mass. And Social Security, 36%, 58% oppose the piratization of Social Security. The data goes on and on and on. Our FOB friend of Bob, Gene, emailed the story to me and says, yay! President Lamp Post poll numbers continue to slide like a greased pig on roller skates down a linoleum ramp. Let's hope he doesn't decide to call Osama. Something happens. Duck and cover. What was his approval rating on September 10th, 2001? 38%, 35%, something like that? And what did Paul Wolfowitz tell the graduating cadets at West Point on June the 9th, 2001. All I can tell you is, what was the phrase? Don't be surprised to be surprised. Something like that. Clear prediction of 9/11. You know, talk about he did the whole project for a new American century thing. Talked about Pearl Harbor. Be prepared to be surprised, I think was the direct quote. Be prepared to be surprised. Wonder how many of the graduating class of 2001 at West Point, having been prepared to be surprised, surprised their parents by winding up in a box covered by a coffin coming back home from the filthy, stinking, rotten sands of Iraq. You gotta wonder. Excellent book. Damn shame I can't remember the name of it. Let me be honest with you. Like I said, coming in here, I'm a little tired, kind of out of it, worn out. I mean, I don't mean like didn't get enough sleep last night. Worn out. I mean, spiritually exhausted. A little worn down by, and you know, who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't be? A month of the Terry Schiavo show, 2 weeks of Popapalooza, capped off today by George Bush. I've never been in a Latin mass, including the one that he just sat through. Oh, my God. And then, of course, you know, you tack onto the top of it our wonderful, stunning, pro-family, pro-life, pro-working, middle-class legislature. Chock full of people I will never again vote for, by the way. And, you know, just turning in that direction for a moment, I'm sure you may have heard this in Carl Mack's big stack of news. West Virginia's Medicaid program may soon stop paying for adult disposable diapers, which cost the agency about $2.7 million a year and require the 5,600 recipients to get reusable supplies. Well, charming. How much? Yeah, $2.7 million. Pardon me while I scratch my head. How much money out of general revenue did we throw into the workers' comp bailout because for all these years these good-for-nothing big coal companies have refused to pay their workers' comp bills? Now, I'm not talking about the bond. I'm not talking about how much out of general revenue every year is going to go into that bailout? Come on. $45 million. And yet we tell these families who are trying to engage in something approaching family values, look, some of you may have been through it. I don't know. But there are a lot of families out there who desperately struggle to keep granny or granddad out of the nursing home because it's the way they were raised. And maybe they qualify for Medicaid. And it's no pleasant topic to address, but certain things happen as one reaches an advanced state of age. And one of them is marked in the fact that there is a huge market in adult disposable undergarments in America now. And we had $45 million a year for the next, oh my God, 20, 30, what is it? 20 years, 30 years to bail out workers' compensation because Massey and Arch and that crowd couldn't be bothered to pay their just debts. So we're going to cut $2.7 million out of the Medicaid budget, and we're going to tell those people struggling to keep granny and granddad or great-grandma and great-grandpa out of the nursing home, why don't you buy cloth diapers? Stop. Just let that one work on you for a few minutes. And, of course, the professionals in the care homes, whether they be nursing homes or private care facilities, they're going to be real thrilled with the legislature over this. And moreover, not just the legislature, the governor's administration, the Department of Health and Human Resources. Oh, we've got to make some painful cuts in Medicaid. Isn't that what Martha Walker said? Isn't she the head of DHHR? Painful cuts. Sometimes I don't think that people who aren't going... Well, stop it. Painful cuts. And according to the AP story, that's one of many proposals to cut nearly $116.7 million out of Medicaid, which faces a $156 million deficit. Sometimes I look at the very... dry, staid, you know, deliberately so. They're trying to, you know, there's no opinion in these stories. It doesn't go, it's not slanted to the left or to the right. Contrary to the wild, paranoid fantasies of the wacky, bizarre right wing, these are just, you know, these are Joe Friday kind of stories, just the facts, ma'am. But to read it in just this plain, dry, analytical, sort of surgical English, That's one of many proposals to cut nearly $116.7 million out of Medicaid, which faces a $156 million deficit. That little two-and-a-half-line paragraph is freighted with so much hell and misery, I don't know if any of us individually could begin to comprehend it. And the Department of Health and Human Resources is still looking for other cuts. Well, let's see, we're cutting out the Depends budget. For God's sakes, let's cut out the Wipes budget. Did I hear at one point in time that we've got a so-called pro-life governor? These are lives. Well, Bob, we got to cut the budget somewhere. Not out on old people. You know, it's interesting that someone who is pro-life would even begin to sign off on something like this, because that pro-life crowd, they're also the put the Ten Commandments everywhere you look crowd, aren't they? And isn't one of those commandments, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth? You know, those Ten Commandments, we've talked about it before, those are rules for getting along in a pre-civilized, just barely past the Stone Age society, nomadic group kind of thing. And one of the things you do in a nomadic society is you don't spit on the old people. Because if you start doing that, it doesn't bode well for the rest of the group. Now, I don't know if you can apply just barely post-Stone Age rules for just barely civilized human beings. I don't know if you can apply that to a group of, to a civilization in the nuclear age in 21st century America. But something down in my gut, you know, and I'm not one of these pro-lifers, because I believe that, you know, well, never mind what I believe. I'm not one of these people that's only concerned with a baby as long as it's in the womb. I'm concerned with all of humanity. And that includes old people whose bowels will not hold anymore. And that includes old people whose bladders will not hold anymore. I'm sorry if you think it's gross. I'm being as gentle about this as I possibly can. What the hell kind of government cuts that kind of funding? What kind of pro-life governor even begins to let his DHHR officials make that kind of statement? Let's see. Certain payments to hospitals are going to be cut for a savings of $22 million. Reduce payments to certain doctors by 7%. Reduce payments for lab services by 10%. Well, you know, you really didn't need that CBC, that complete blood count. We'll just put it in an old shot glass and hold it up to the light. Prescription drug changes in payments, about $44 million. What in God's name do you say, again, I ask you, what do you say about a state that tells Mr. and Mrs. West Virginian, well, you know, we won't be paying for Granny's Depends anymore. You can just let her wallow in it. What do you say about that? How dare this administration call itself pro-life?
But Bob, he's a Democrat.
I don't care. Pissed off. I don't even like to use that word, but this makes me... God, this makes me mad. Of all the things you could cut. I mean, that's...
Woo!
A great day a-coming. To the phones. Paul is with us. Hey, Paul, you're head on.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, just fine. Let me help you along a little bit.
All right.
There's more to come.
Oh, Lord, yes, I know, Paul.
Hospice, ambulance companies, doctors.
You know, I had an uncle, God rest his soul, died about a year ago, and he was diabetic, and he could not travel, And it had gotten so bad that, you know, they wouldn't even pay for an ambulance to come and get him to take to his doctor's appointment.
Right. But it's going to get even worse because when he signed that bill in 2003, H.R. 1,
yep,
this was all there. And I'd been telling people 2 years before what was coming. Last October, when I stood up before Nussbaum and all the rest of them at Tamarack to tell them what was coming, cut 6 2/3% every year for the next 14 years, what's coming down from the federal government to the state on Medicaid.
Well, they aim to kill it, Paul.
Oh, yeah. Just like you're trying to kill Social Security. The man doesn't even have a plan.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah, to kill Social Security. That's what
yeah,
it amounts to.
To kill Social Security, to kill Medicaid, because these sick freaks like Grover Norquist and Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay believe that America is not America unless their buddies get all the money.
And throw Newt Gingrich in there, too.
Oh, yeah. Now, I mean, you know, we hear a lot from the pro-life crowd, Paul, about God's moral judgment on America. When we cut out funding for folks to buy Depends for their aged loved ones, don't we run the risk of some sort of divine moral judgment?
We do, because Social Security is one generation takes care of another.
Right.
There is nothing more biblical than that. And they're always talking about being so moral and so Christian. But what did Christ say? You always take care of the widow and the orphan.
Yep. And this
take care of the poor.
Yeah, and this is telling the widows, the orphans, the poor, the infirm, the miserable, the sick, the aged, to just get lost.
Yeah. Then turn around and tell people, I'm born again. Born to what?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the publican there in the old times. Every which way the wind blew, that's where they were.
Yep.
And but his ratings, as you read off tonight, was also on Lou Dobbs.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And Lou has shook him up from one end to the other.
How so?
He's keeping this thing on the border, illegal aliens and all of that. He's bringing in all the pros and cons on it, and he confronts every one of them. He doesn't take any guff from any of them. He puts the questions to them.
And him a Republican, you know, yeah. Card-carrying.
You know why?
Why?
He's concerned about our nation. He knows if you kill the working class, you don't have a nation.
Why is that so hard to understand, Paul?
It's really not. The people are not paying any attention. They're just like Dr. Bill. I told Dr. Bill, we haven't taught the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights in the schools for 30 years. So therefore, they don't even know what their government, how to even operate.
There's a lot of truth in that. You know, there's another side of this coin, though, Paul. I have received emails from people explaining to me, and these are, you know, professing hardcore right-wing evangelical Christians, you know, patiently explaining to me that it is unchristian and contrary to the doctrine of Jesus Christ to take care of the for government to try to take care of the poor.
You know, who? First thing off, you say, we the people. Who is the government? We the people.
That's what they told me.
But if you're the people, why aren't you doing your job?
Exactly.
And then it's just like Congress, and they're a bunch of deadheads when it comes to the American people. But we just appropriated another $1 billion for illegal aliens' health. It went into effect 1st of January.
You know, I find it hard to be rough on illegal aliens. Because I just view myself as a human being, Paul.
Well, but the point is here. You got a country, Mexico. You got billionaires and millionaires down there.
Sure.
Why aren't they taking care of their own people?
You know what? That was my next statement. You got to take care of your own house.
That's right. But you know, we have a constitution to live by. But here is the Congress and the president have all broken their oath of office.
Oh, they've broken it, snapped it into 64 different pieces, peed on it, and set it on fire.
Yeah, you're not a citizen of this country unless you're born here or you're naturalized.
That's true.
And that's an oath of office that they take.
You know, it just feels so funny, Paul, because I'm supposed to be the liberal, and I'm arguing for sane fiscal policy.
Yeah. Well, you're not a liberal, Bob. You're American.
Well, thank you for that, Paul. I do appreciate it.
That's where I stand. Don't talk to me about Democrat or Republican. Don't tell me conservative or liberal. Are you American?
Yeah.
Do you stand behind what our forefathers give us? Do you stand behind what the men of World War I, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam?
Civil War? Yeah. Yeah, I think, and maybe that's the question we got to stop asking. Maybe it's I forget who said it. Maybe we're deliberately diverted with all these monikers and all these labels. I once called myself on this program a constitutionalist. Never mind the Democrats and the Republicans and the conservatives and the liberals and the progressives and the greens and the golds and the blues and the browns. I'm a constitutionalist, and I'm beginning to feel that way.
Yeah, and if we do not stand behind that Constitution, that Declaration of Independence, and those Bills of Rights, Bob, we don't have a nation. And it's just like one of the Supreme Court judges, the lady, says we should be looking, our Constitution is stagnant. You know, it's old. We should be looking to the outside of our country on making laws.
I'd say we've got enough decisional law in this country to figure things out.
Yeah. If people even understood the Declaration of Independence, who did our forefathers plead to become a nation?
I understand.
Our Creator.
Yeah. God and nature's God. Nature and nature's God.
Right.
Yeah.
And we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
You know, I wonder if there's anybody who still understands what self-evident means.
The self-evident.
Yeah, doesn't take any explaining.
No, it doesn't
take any analysis. Doesn't take anyone else saying, yes, you're right.
Uh-huh.
It happens because it happens.
The
Latin, res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. Hey, Paul, we got to roll. Thanks so much, and have yourself a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now. And more of your calls when we come back. 252-6200 is the local number. 800-620-WWNR, 9967. That's the out-of-area number. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Cal Ripken. In sports, consistency is a quality to be proud of. And when it comes to helping kids, Shriners Hospitals have a record that's second to none. For over 80 years, they've provided expert medical care to kids with orthopedic problems or severe burns, totally free of charge. The Shriners combine leading-edge research with an outstanding teaching program. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. Call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
What budget have you going out less? Stretch your entertainment dollars by visiting a library in the newly formed Mountain Library Network. One card travels with you to libraries in 16 West Virginia counties. Stop by a participating library to sign up for your new card and to check out the benefits. Many libraries, one card does it all.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Scattering of showers during this evening will give way to a partially clear after midnight sky with a low around 44. Seems a little chilly for April, but nonetheless, April is a month of change, so we'll anticipate improvements after sunrise tomorrow. A Saturday high of 63 feels pretty good with a mix of clouds and sunshine. Clear 42 tomorrow night, becomes 72, mainly sunny by Sunday afternoon, and the next chance of rain not until Tuesday.
WWNR Beckley.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. You know, I guess I was caught up in the generalization talking about these Medicaid cuts. Because, you know, it's not just old people that use Depends. No, it's not. It's young people, too. Thank God she's not still alive, and thank God she's not in West Virginia, because the DHHR's proposal would yank the Depends right out from under Terry Schiavo, wouldn't they? And what did those so-called cut your life freaks down in Florida, and God knows, right-wing talk radio, every time you turn the dial, reading that quote, I can't even remember who it's from, that, you know, you measure the greatness of a nation by the way it treats the weakest of its members. I'm paraphrasing. But wasn't that one of their talking points? Didn't I hear that filthy, greed-fisted, sick, just sleaze and slime-covered Tom DeLay babbling some of that foolishness? The idea isn't foolishness. The idea is true. But that these hypocrites would latch onto it in that context is offensive. There are adults, young adults, who through, birth trauma or having air being deprived of oxygen during the birth process are unable to attend to their own needs through disease processes, car wrecks. But we're going to save $2.7 million by refusing to cover their Depends. How many different levels is that wrong on, he said, hanging the preposition at the end of the sentence. Shall we count? Now let's go to the phones. 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob.
How you doing?
How you doing?
I don't know. I think I've been better.
Well, I tell you, with a voice like yours, when you get going, you can always drive a cab.
I'll take that as a high compliment.
You got it. It was intended as one. God, you can be heard over a Force 8 gale.
Well, sometimes I think I could stand out on the veranda and scream and outreach our 25 watts.
Well, we need for somebody to, you know. And I want you to keep screaming, really. I'll tell you, it's just absolutely crazy what this government's done. But, you know, I figure it this way. And maybe I belong to one of those classes of Jews who lived in Germany that said things were going to get better. They did. I hope not.
Yeah.
But I hope that the people will begin to see what's going on in this country and that they will be able to intervene and realize that we aren't going to have a country left.
Well, the intervention is in November 2006, unless Almighty God gets busy with the lightning bolt business.
Well, let's see. That'll give people 11 months of the new Medicaid bill. And, of course, now in January of 2006, Medicaid Part B will go up 20%.
Medicare.
And Medicare Part B will go up 20%. And, of course, it's supposed to go up 20% for the next 3 years after that. So, I mean, I think when they get a taste of that, I think that people will begin to realize exactly what H.R. 1 is and perhaps, like Prohibition, work toward its repeal.
Jim, you've got a pretty good analytical mind. I've been, you know, talking about these state cuts in Medicaid, and I find the lead on the Depends just, you know, stultifying. And I referenced the fact that, you know, this is the governor's administration.
Bob, I can barely hear you. I'm
well,
sorry.
That's okay. This is the governor's administration, and he being a Democrat, I think it's only fair to note that these hellish cuts have been forced upon us by, you know, by the Congress and by our Republican president. But by the same token, a Hobson's choice like this, how can you do that and still call yourself a Democrat?
Are you talking about what Manchin has done in this state?
Yeah.
Well, I just wonder what kind of Democrat he was to begin with, Bob.
I'm beginning to, too.
I mean, I've never had any doubts about Joe Manchin. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's nothing but one of those Democrats in name only. Because I can remember before the election last year, as long as you mentioned Manchin's name to a Republican, they just got all all you can see every tooth left in their head. I'm serious. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I don't know. But I think things maybe get worse, but they will get better.
I honor your optimism, Jim.
You have to take that type of attitude because, I mean, because we just can't let so much that has been, so much effort that's been put into this country just fall apart like that.
But, you know, you for those who were watching, you could see it coming from a long way back. You know, George Bush is not the first person to scream that FDR was a socialist.
Oh, I know. I mean, there were people who absolutely hated FDR and called him a traitor to his class and things like that. And, you know, it was just incredible what that man went through. But that man was a pragmatist. He realized that if he didn't do something, he would be the last president. He said so.
Well, and an incredibly intelligent man, you know, Harvard class of 1904. And to have another Harvard student come along and say that, you know, everything he did was just wrong. You know,
oh, Bob, listen, listen, when you talk about Bush and Roosevelt, that's like talking about chicken salads and chicken, you know what, they both come from the same thing.
But, you know, wouldn't you just love to get George to answer a question? If Social Security is so wrong, and if unemployment insurance is so wrong, and if the Securities and Exchange Commission is so wrong, what's the answer?
Well, I tell you what, maybe one day, and you know how the fortunes of war are, and you never can tell what's going to happen. Maybe George Bush may have to depend on some of those programs. You just never can tell.
No, you can't.
I mean, look at Barbara Hutton, one of the richest women in the world, right?
Yeah.
You know what she had in her bank account when she died?
No.
Less than 2 G's.
Wow. Well,
I mean, the mighty, listen, the thought, you know, it's just, don't ever say never, and these people who are so assured of their own positions and security, sometimes it's a little bit of a falsehood to them, you know?
Yeah, I just hate to hear people like Bush talking about the miracles of the free market, because he has never to this day, ever, not once, been dependent upon the free market.
No, never. But, you know, going back to the SEC, of course, you know who the first chairman was, don't you?
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head, no.
Joe Kennedy.
Well,
well, you know what FDR said?
What?
He said, you got to have a crook to catch crook. Because that's how Kennedy made most of his money, was selling short before the crash. And,
that's
you
true.
Know, he knew.
Yeah, it's not all in bootleg liquor.
Jump on the Roosevelt bandwagon because he knew which way the winds were blowing. And, of course, you know, Roosevelt made him that. Then, of course, after his little stint at the Court of St. James during the Blitz, Roosevelt said he never wanted to see that son of a bitch again.
Yeah. Is it true that when he was serving at the Court of St. James that Joe Kennedy sent a card to the king that said, "Surrender, Dorothy."
I'm not sure of that, but I know that every time he could, he would leave Prince's Gate, which is where the American embassy was, and he hightailed it out of London because he couldn't take the sound of the bombs. And, you know, he was considered to be an appeaser and a pro-Nazi sympathizer. And his sons were actually ashamed of him, number one, because he didn't, you know, fighting World War One, and number two, because of his behavior when he was ambassador to the Court of St. James. You know, a lot of people want to speak ill of the Kennedys, but those boys had a heck of a lot to contend with. I mean, that old man was so nasty, they could even bring a day home trying to get their bedroom.
Yeah, that's when that family really earned its bones, was on that generation.
I mean, you know, people can say what they want to about the Kennedys all they want to, but, you know, I know they had a lot of material advantages, and they were pushed by their father, but their father could be an extremely destructive man. I mean, look what he did to Rosemary.
Sure.
I mean, just had that lobotomy.
You need a lobotomy. Yeah.
You didn't even know what would happen if they cut so deep in that poor thing. She wasn't even beyond the third grade. She couldn't even take care of herself. But, I mean, not to get off on that. Listen, I was just jumping topics here. I was just rereading the book I told you about called Hitler's Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end of the book, he makes a reference to, well, after Pius died, they read his personal testament and how to, and you know, and no wonder John Paul II was doing so much apologizing, because Pius XII left behind this, and he said, "Have pity on me, O Lord, as towards thy mercy, knowledge of the deficiencies, failures, and sins committed during so long a pontificate and so grave an epoch has made clear to me my inadequacies and worthiness. I humbly ask all pardon for all I've offended, armed, and scandalized." And I thought to myself, a lot of good that did to the Jews, that you just let the Nazis run roughshod over, you know.
No, there's no getting around it.
I mean, really. The thing that they point out in this book is that John Paul number two was basically intent upon rolling back Vatican II and reshaping the church hierarchy into a pyramidal structure, okay, with him at the top. And also, you mentioned the other day that, you know, he is a great friend of the Opus Dei.
That's correct.
And even, I think, wanted to canonize its founder, that's a right-wing Spanish militaristic type organization.
Right. The founder was, Navarro? And, yeah, he was. Uh-huh. Was he fully canonized or just beatified so far?
I'm not sure. I mean, my God. Do you realize he canonized more saints than all the popes preceding him all the way back to Peter?
Combined? Yeah. Yeah, he did. And the thing that's you mentioned Opus Dei, that is, they are a law unto themselves,
yes,
because of their relationship to the papacy itself. And if people bother to learn what Opus Dei is, they would be scared to death. But and then you find out who's a member in America.
Now, I had a friend who was a very devout Catholic from Connecticut, and of course she grew up around neighborhoods where there were nothing but Roman Catholics. And she and I used to talk. As a matter of fact, she was always bringing over Catholic literature and stuff like that. And I just finally told her, I said, "Look, I'm not interested in becoming a Roman Catholic, and I will tell you why." And, you know, during the course of our friendship, we had discussed church history and, you know, just mentioning things and the histories of popes and stuff. She was amazed. She said, "Well, I didn't know about that. And I don't know about this." And she said, "My God, you know more about my church than I do." And I said, "Well, that's precious little." I said, "What do they teach you guys?" I said, "Do they teach you any of church history? I mean, do they teach you about Pope Sixtus? Do they teach you about Pope Julius? I mean, do they teach you about this, that, and the other?" And, you know, and it's just incredible how little some of these people know. And, of course, now what they want you to believe is not based on history, because one of their theologians said that history was the vomit of humanity.
Nice attitude. Yeah, this kind of blew me away to find this publication, this 2003 article from Catholic New Times, headline, "Pope Fears Bush is Antichrist."
What? Pope is scared that George Bush is Antichrist?
Yeah, "Pope Fears Bush is Antichrist." May 18th, 2003, Catholic New Times. Apparently, according to the article, John Paul II said to some of his close associates that he was concerned that George W. Bush is the Antichrist.
Well, I could have certainly laid his fears to rest right then, but he seems to have gotten over it.
Yeah. Well, you know? that's okay.
I mean, JP number two helped him get elected.
That, and there's no getting around that.
I mean, more Catholics voted for him than they did for John Kerry, a fellow Roman Catholic, right?
It defies the and like we've said before, Jim, they got in bed with a bunch of people that would kill them as soon as look at them.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I don't understand people who are so. But the key here, Bob, is those people and their knowledge of their church and their church history and what is in the Bible and, you know, that sort of thing. And if people have to have a Protestant tell them about the history of their own church and what's going on, then that tells me what kind of teaching they've been getting when they go to that church And basically what is learned by rote, and I mean, they learned the Hail Marys, the Our Fathers, the Decades, the Novenas, things like that. And, you know, and I'm not putting down the Catholic Church, but
no.
I am criticizing it for not being more open with its own people and allowing them some latitude in having to think.
Well, but then again, would you realistically expect them to teach its membership that the church was responsible for the death of 5 million women in 200 years as a function of the Inquisition and the witch hunt?
Well, they wouldn't do that, no.
And the, what is it, Malus Maleficorum?
Yeah.
The witch's hammer?
Yeah. You're talking about Malleus. Now, that has to do with witchcraft?
Yeah, the witch's hammer, or the hammer of the witches.
Yeah, that was written by two monks that
right.
were trying to stamp out witchcraft and... Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. I don't know if John Paul ever apologized for that or not.
I don't think he did.
But, I mean, of course, the Inquisition, it was not a very pleasant thing. Of course, you know, both sides can hurl recriminations at the other, Protestants versus Catholics.
Oh!
It's a bad time in which to be alive.
Yeah, no doubt about that, and proof of my thesis that... There are very few, if any, organized versions of Christianity that have very much in common with Christ.
No, I'm afraid you're right. It appears as though they're basically getting away from it. And, you know, what I saw, and I watched the papal funeral this morning, and I saw a lot of pageantry, a lot of panoply, a lot of beautiful vestments and beautiful buildings. But, you know, I was thinking, I said, God, who directed this thing? Cecil B. DeMille?
Just about.
I mean, really, it was almost like a DeMille spectacle, wasn't it?
No, without a doubt. And you know, the Santo Subito banners, Saint Now. You know,
I know, and they'll probably do that.
And I heard one CNN commentator, and it just about blew me out of my seat, saying, "Well, don't you think it could be attributed as a miracle of John Paul II?" That the Prime Minister of Israel shook hands with the President of Syria?
No, he didn't say that, did he really?
That if I'm lying, I'm dying.
Well, that guy, well, whoever.
And then somebody else chimed in and said, yes.
A born-again idiot.
Yes, and of course he also shook hands with the President of Iran. This is a miracle.
But those are not the types of miracles that... are supposed to be used when they have that tribunal.
Right.
After
my understanding of that kind of miracle, Jim, is where the dead walk.
Well, it's supposed to be pretty dramatic. Now, I'm not sure, but you know, I'll tell you something, and I don't mean to get on here, but this is the type of mentality that possesses some of these people. Back in 1983, in Mexico, this poor Mexican peasant woman was baking a tortilla in her oven. Okay.
Oh, God, is this the one that had Mary on it, or was it Christ?
I'm not sure. But anyway, she called the local padre, and the padre got a hold of the Monsignor, and the Monsignor got a hold of the bishop. I guess they went up to chain of command. Who knows? They may have gone straight to the bishop. Who knows? But anyway, within 3 months, 15,000 people had passed through her kitchen, and it was called the Shrine of the Holy Tortilla.
And of course, it happened not too long back with the cheese sandwich with Mary on it. And I remember a few years back, there was a cheese sandwich. And there was a story a few years back at a bakery in Nashville where there was a hot cross bun or something with Jesus' face on it. And thousands of people ran to it. And that just blows my mind. But you know,
well, I like to believe in miracles, but I would hope they would have a more dramatic and less mundane origin than that. But I mean, it's just incredible how these people think and how they believe. And if they believe in stuff like that, and I'll tell you one thing, they'll just believe in anything. Like I say, I wish I were in real estate because I could tell them I've got a bridge that's going over the Verrazano Narrows. I'd love to sell them.
But you know, honestly, Jim, is there much difference in that crowd and the UFO crowd?
Not really.
And what it really speaks to, doesn't it? It speaks to the human yearning to believe that someone or something is looking after them.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of insecure people in this world, and a lot of them turn to religion for some type of solace and some type of solidarity and some type of fixed situation. in which they feel comfortable.
I mean, we know now.
And I don't condemn that.
No, but I mean, for instance, we know now as moderns that the so-called miraculous apparition at Guadalupe in Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe, you're familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Well, we know now that, you know, that wasn't even one generation that the Spanish had been in Mexico, and we know now that that reference was not some ignorant Mexica miraculously speaking the name of a place in Spain. That was the desire of churchmen to translate what he was saying into the name of a place in Spain. To wit, what he was saying was Guadalupe, which was the Mexica snake goddess.
Oh, feathered serpent.
No, that's Quetzalcoatl.
Okay.
This
okay.
is Guadalupe, and it was a female deity with aspects similar to that of the Blessed Virgin.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm having a little hard time hearing you, but I understand what you're saying. But when you go into those parts of the world, and particularly in the Caribbean rim, and you explore some of the aspects of what they call Santeria.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I asked this Catholic friend of mine, what do you know about Santeria? Nothing. I mean, I could have been talking about, she thought that was some kind of drink. I'm not kidding you.
Isn't that Spanish wine with the fruit juice in it?
That's yeah. what she said. And I said,
oh,
no.
Lordy.
I said, this is a combination in which African voodoo and Roman Catholicism have been combined. And I said, my friend, listen, I said, you need to really sit down and have a talk with your priest if you can. And I think she did. And that's when I think she was forbidden to come and see me anymore.
Oh, merciful heaven.
I really believe that's what happened. I can't prove it. But, I mean, it's just incredible how they will, you know, mental poverty is a terrible thing. I mean, knowing, pretending like you know something and you don't know it, that's bad. But, I mean, just being basically rote ignorant and not even knowing your own church and your own belief system, that's a dangerous thing. And that's what I'm afraid is happening. But I can tell you this. There are a lot of Catholics in this country particularly that are getting wiser, and I think they're beginning to realize a lot of things, and I hope they'll continue to. The ones that have a head on their shoulders, the ones who are thinking.
I tend to agree with you, Jim. We're at break time, though. Thanks so much, and have yourself a great weekend, all right?
And the same to you, sir.
All right, thanks. Okay, bottom of the hour break. When we come back, your phone calls and a little bit more of fun with West Virginia's budget, fun with West Virginia's legislature. Oh, just fun in West Virginia. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. For the second time last night, Fayetteville Town Council has given the go-ahead for a new shopping center on the outskirts of town. Council members voted unanimously to accept the recommendations of the Fayetteville Planning and Zoning Commission to rezone attractive land near Nickelville Road from residential to commercial. That will allow Paramount Development Corporation to build a shopping mall, which will include the Walmart Superstore, Lowe's, and 13 other retail outlets. Before the vote, the council heard an hour of public comment from people both for and against. Mara Kistler said she was disillusioned that the process was not a process.
I look at the equipment out there pushing dirt around, and that, to me, is a slap in the face. Because from my perspective, this has been a done deal before we even started. And I know you'll say it's not, but I'm still looking for a shred of evidence that shows that you were willing to engage the ideas that we brought before you.
Many opponents of the mall say the land it's being built on is the site of a Civil War cemetery, and that concern was echoed by Susan Pierce, the state's deputy historic preservation officer. She said there was evidence soldiers are buried on that property. Bad timing is blamed for the failure of legislation that would have allowed residents in Hancock, Ohio, Jefferson, and Kanawha counties to vote on legalizing table games. State Racing Association President John Cuccavinci says the tracks waited too long by not having Senate Bill 442 introduced until 3 weeks into the legislature's regular session. House of Delegates has sent to the governor his bill to change the state's mandatory child safety seat law. Vote was 93-7 this morning. Senate Bill 414 would require safety seats for all children under age 8 and less than 4 feet 9 inches tall. That law now allows seat belts for children under age 4 and older if they weigh more than 40 pounds. That's the news. Now the forecast for this evening, partly cloudy. Temperatures in the upper 50s to around 60. Tonight, cloudy. Then becoming partly cloudy late tonight and cooler, low near 40. Tomorrow, sunny, high near 62. Clear tomorrow night, low 40. And for Sunday, sunny, with a high near 70. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
It's time for the Beckley Rotary Club's Monte Carlo Night. It happens Saturday, April 9th, starting at 6:30 at Glade Springs Resort Conference Center. Come join us for a night of games, food, and a silent auction. Tickets are $50 per person. For tickets, just call 763-4720. 763-4720. All proceeds donated to Raleigh County Commission on Aging Adult Daycare Facility. Beckley Rotary Club's Monte Carlo Night, Saturday, April 9th at Glade Springs Resort Conference Center.
Any of you guys out there looking for the girl next door? Because I know where you can find her. Cupid.com. It's a place to meet women that live close by. Cupid.com isn't interested in compiling some big worldwide network. They're focused on putting you in touch with the cuties you pass on your way to work. People who share your same area code. Basic Cupid memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even reply to messages from gold members, a service you usually pay for on other sites. You can remain anonymous and still put Cupid's auto match to work, locating women with your favorite traits and qualities. Bigger online dating sites show you a universe of women, which is perfect if you're into long-distance relationships. But Cupid.com shrinks that world to women right in your backyard, because the girl next door never lives three states away. Find your true love at Cupid.com, either online or at one of our fun local events.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to those in the news who had their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober is a big-shot corporate lobbyist, the sort you can find in your own legislature or city hall. He's Bill Hammond, chief influence peddler for the Texas Association of Business. Hammond is presently entangled in a corruption case involving him, Tom DeLay, and a gaggle of other GOP politicos. Apparently, however, being at the center of a national political scandal is not enough trouble for Bill, so he's decided to cross that ooze line that supposedly separates the public interest from personal. Showing both ethical obtuseness and blinding arrogance, he has now tried to leverage his position as front man for Texas corporate power to, are you ready, get a legislative job for his son. Each Texas legislator recently received a dear friend letter from Hammond, who happens to dispense beaucoup bucks to help elect or defeat legislators, stating that his boy has graduated from college and is, quote, on the lookout for a job. Printed on TAB letterhead, Bill's solicitation asks that legislators contact him, not the son, about any available positions. In today's world of nuclear-level ethical implosions, the significance of this goober's little play for personal gain is not in its scope, but in the arrogant attitude of entitlement it displays. Governments everywhere are infested with powerhouse lobbying hacks like him, who've strayed so far from any ethical mooring that nothing is too small or too big for them to try to take. Of course, he's clueless. I can assure you 100% there's no attempt to exert undue influence on anyone. That's silly, he says, disingenuously adding, if I offended any legislator, I apologize. This is Jim Hightower saying, legislator, it's the workaday people of this country that you offend, you gooberhead.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
WWNR Beckley.
He's got the heart of a conservative, pickled on a jar on his desk. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. About 22 minutes before 9 o'clock, back to the Medicaid issue. Just for a moment. Anybody got the numbers on how much it's going to cost to give these pay raises to circuit judges and Supreme Court justices and governors and treasurers and auditors and the attorneys general and everybody that's getting these raises? You think, I mean, would it come anywhere close to paying for the depends? Or is that, am I just out of line? I mean, what the hell are our priorities in this state? And it's a fair question to ask, what are our priorities in America? But we're dealing with Tom DeLay's idea of fairness here, you know, the $15 billion cut in Medicaid that he advocated, and people like the loathsome Shelley Moore said, that sounds like a great idea, Tom. You want to get in the hot tub with me? We can pour champagne on each other. To even be talking about raises at the time that we're talking about cutting out depends for people who can't control their bowels and bladders. I'm really not trying to be gross about this, but this is fundamentally wrong. This is wrong with a capital W. This is wrong with a rrr. Oh, I don't know. Well, I bet Jeff has the numbers. Hey, Jeff. You're head
on.
Yeah.
Are you on?
I'm here. You here?
What's going on?
Just
life in the left.
Just being disgusted.
Huh?
Just being disgusted.
Oh. What was, remember when Byrd voted for the bankruptcy bill?
Yeah.
What was the reason you gave, the excuse you made for him?
Well, it wasn't an excuse. It was an example of some rather trenchant political genius.
You said that he voted for it because it had the votes anyway, basically?
Well, it had the votes, and moreover, it would put Shelley Moore in an uncomfortable position of having to either buck Tom DeLay or agree with him.
Well, I say that's why Shelley voted for this bill, because it had the votes anyway.
No.
Well, how can you...
Well, okay, I'll tell you how, Jeff.
Why can't I make the same excuses for my people as you can yours?
Well, because mine was backed up with logic and common sense, and you're merely parroting my words. Whereas, you know, yours won't support that because, among other things, Shelley Moore had to vote for the $15 billion Medicaid cut because she took Tom's money.
Well, I don't think much...
Oh, you don't think she took Tom's money?
I don't think much of anything Byrd does has to do with common sense.
Well, how about Shelley Moore? She is the second highest recipient of Tom's dirty trim arm pack money.
Well, have you ever seen the kind of money that Byrd takes?
Sure.
He's got tons of money, and he's already out there raising.
And he's got to, because every Republican political action committee in America will be donating to Shelley Moore if she runs against him.
That's not what I called to talk about. I don't call to talk about West Virginia a little bit. He was. I didn't call to argue with you, Bob. What are you arguing with me for?
Yeah, you started.
I think those pay raises are going to run about $2,257,000.
You pretty solid on that?
Yeah.
so that would pay for the better point, the better part of the Depends budget?
Senator Weeks pointed out that taxpayers earning substantially less will see 2257 of their money go to cover the increases for 65 circuit judges, 5 Supreme Court, and Family Court. So he says that I don't guess that covers the Secretary of State and the governor, which I can understand the governor's raise.
Well, I can't.
Well, got to get...
If you can raise the kind of millions that gets raised in this state to become governor, frankly, they could pay you $1 a year and you wouldn't feel it.
Really?
Well, I mean, look at what was spent to
He's not supposed to be taking his campaign money and living on it, though, is he?
I understand that, Jeff, but look what was spent. You don't run for governor if you're not already a rich man. That's the nature of our dirty political process now.
I understand.
I personally oppose the raise for all the Board of Public Works elected officials. And
You're really low in the phone, Bob. I can just barely hear you.
Okay, that's the second person. John, can we do something about this? Does that help?
A little bit.
Okay. Well,
I'll take some more.
Okay, crank it up a little more. Okay. All right.
That's hard to hear you.
I understand. We're trying to
save electricity.
No, it's just technical. It's technical stuff. But I oppose all the Board of Public Works raises, and even though you know you got the right wing out there saying that you know judges deserve to die and things like that,
I don't think this is the
time to give those people raises.
What about school teachers though?
School teachers is a different issue.
That costs a whole lot more than this.
I understand that. And are they getting them?
Don't look like it, does it?
Doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I guess has anybody talked about third-party bad faith tonight?
No, I
haven't been listening.
No, I've been out. I've got the story here in front of me. I haven't gotten to it yet. It passed,
you know that, right?
Yeah, I do know that, and I'm afraid that if I start talking about it, I'm going to start vomiting on the air. I'm really, really angry.
70-29.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong, isn't it?
That's disgusting.
A lot of amendments were tried to stick onto it.
And they all failed.
Is this the one where we can come back and reevaluate in 3 years?
I don't know if there's a sunset on it or not.
I thought that there was, or maybe that's one of the amendments that they tried to put on reevaluate.
There's nothing in this story about there being any reevaluation period on it, and they usually hang that kind of a detail on the AP reports.
And during the State of the Union address, Manchin did say $100 million, didn't he?
I don't remember. Did he?
There's a delegate from, I think her name is Carrie Webster from Kanawha County, a woman.
Yeah, she's a personal friend of mine.
I've seen her talking on the floor of the House, and she said that she was complaining she doesn't like this bill.
No.
And she said that, Mr. Governor, you started out during the State of the Union address $100 million, and then you come down to $50 million. And then you had all the numbers blacked out when we went Freedom of Information to get the particulars. And she was like, well, it's hard to trust you. You know, we it's not a believable story. Is there something fishy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fishy all the way to the core.
What happens if nothing happens? What happens if the rates don't come down but just a little tiny bit?
Well, Joe said he'd certainly call them on the carpet and give them a stern talking to. I'm not kidding.
What could that do us? About as much as filing a complaint to the insurance commission?
Yeah, right. The only thing that changed on this, Jeff, is that there's some sort of a process in the House bill that allows fees to be collected from insurers for a special fund to compensate consumers who were treated unfairly. Now, I don't know how the insurance commissioner, the entirely useless West Virginia insurance commissioner, is going to figure out how much a person's entitled to. You know, if somebody else has hurt you, an insurance company has dug its heels in, drug its heels, lowballed you, and forced you into bankruptcy, and then you get put on a payment plan because of this congressional bankruptcy nightmare. I don't know how. Letting Jane Klein decide that you need a buck and a quarter from Allsnake or whatever is going to do you any good. You've got that's the whole idea of a judicial system. You take, you know, what does the Constitution say? That you have the right to petition for redress of grievances. And it says you do that to the courts, not to the insurance commissioner.
Just gonna have to really remember and talk about it.
Oh, I'm not going to forget this. And I'm going to find out.
I tell you, that West Virginia legislature website, that isn't worth 2 cents.
It's a booger to navigate, isn't it?
It's terrible. Why can't you just put the bills how they voted? You know, I have never.
Well, do you really think they want it to be that easy for you to find out, Jeff?
I don't think they do. I really don't.
I mean, I've got a pretty good idea on that 70-29 vote. I've got a pretty good idea who the Democrats are in the state of West Virginia, in the House of Delegates.
I bet you all five. Yours is Pino and Luisos.
Pino and Luisos and David.
You just got two delegates, don't you?
No, I got three.
Yeah.
David. You had to ask.
That's okay. It's hard to remember all.
John Pino, Tom Luisos, and David. Doggone it. He's a school principal over at Collins Middle School.
That's okay. But do you think Pino and Luis?
No, I bet Pino voted in favor of the bill. I bet David, what's his name, voted in favor of the bill. And I just about bet that Luisos voted against it.
I bet you all five of ours was for it.
It's entirely possible. And they deserve the approbation, or reprobation, I guess, of the voters if they did.
What do you think about the big, you know, this is just so par for the course. It makes us, and keeps us right in tradition of being the laughing stock of the United States. Our newly instituted sheep and goat tax.
Oh, God, I missed that one.
You didn't see that?
Nope.
Well.
Do tell me about it. I can't wait.
All sheep owners and goat owners will pay $1 per animal to a fund to help control the out-of-control coyote population.
What about the cattle owners? The coyotes don't attack cattle?
I don't know.
Or could it be that the West Virginia Cattlemen's Association has more clout than the sheepers?
I don't know, but that's just, you know, I can promise you that when the coyotes are gone, the tax will be at $5 and it won't go anywhere.
That's possible.
And it'll probably be, you know, let that old camel's nose under the tin again, didn't they?
Well,
it'll be chickens and cats next. That's discrimination against cats in Raleigh County anyway, that they tax my dogs. My neighbor's cat hollers discrimination all the time. $3 for a dog and nothing for a cat, and these dogs, they're...
Yeah, and you know the fun part of it? I don't know if you realize this or not, Jeff, but where your dog tax is concerned... let's say you've got a purebred old Rhodesian Ridgeback. They're really expensive, $2,000-$3,000 a dog. And somebody kills your Rhodesian Ridgeback, and you file a property damage claim with your homeowner's insurance. If you didn't pay that $3, the insurance company doesn't have to pay.
They'll exploit any loophole to get out of paying.
Sure, absolutely. And these are the guys that... in today's Charleston paper, a great, great commentary by Greg Prudich. He's a lawyer down in Princeton. He's a good one. Saying that, you know, the essence of all of these rights giveaways are a question, are a matter of being told, trust us.
What about the, here's another one. What about the 2 cent on the stamp increase coming because the Congress... is saying that they have to get them a little excess fund going. You heard about that one?
No, that one's evaded me.
Stamps are supposed to
stamps
get
are going up.
Stamps to have to be risen 2 cents because Congress has mandated that the Postal Service get them like a $2 or $3 billion excess fund piled up.
So what, 39 cents a stamp now?
I think it was 37 going to 39. I believe
it
might be a penny.
That's what I mean. It'll go up to 39.
Yeah, but that's just a fund that'll be raided and robbed and Pilfered and spent on who can...
Well, when they do it, don't
what?
Blame... When they do it, Jeff, don't blame the Democrats in Congress.
Okay, I won't.
because they can't... The Democratic members of the House and the Senate are absolutely powerless now.
Well, let me go over this with you.
Can't
then.
Do a blessed
I didn't do
thing.
Much show prep tonight here. I got this for you. New York Review summarized some recent analysis of Walmart's effects on communities and labor practices for a 200-employee Walmart store. And ours over here in Beckley's, I think, over 500.
Gee whiz.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Here's a 200 store.
Right.
The government is spending $108,000 a year on children's health care, $125,000 a year in tax credits and deductions for low-income families, and $42,000 a year in housing assistance. The report estimates that a 200-employee Walmart store costs federal taxpayers $420,000 a year, or $2,103 an employee, and that translates into a total annual welfare bill of $2.5 billion for Walmart's 1.2 million employees.
Wow. So our little Walmart here, what, about $1 million a year?
Let's see, it was 420. Yeah, I'd say about 1.1.
Yeah.
And plus, too,
low prices every day.
They do all kinds of stuff to get by. I think I've heard it said before, and maybe you know. You know how it seems like these Lowe's and Walmarts and these stores, about every once in a while they move?
Yeah.
You ever heard any reason to why they do that?
Yeah, because it's a tax dodge.
They can depreciate that building for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And after 10 years, you can't depreciate it no more. So they, every 10 years, they build a new building. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes, I have.
So they do that, too.
Yeah.
They don't want to pay anything, it don't look like to me.
And they damn near don't. Well, did you hear about the big press gaggle that Walmart put on a few days ago?
About the Fayetteville thing?
No. They had the head of Walmart had about 200 journalists from all over the country out to the fabulous headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas. And
I didn't hear about you.
Well, he explained to them just why. Well, one of them asked him, you know, why do you make hardworking Americans subsidize your health care? And I about fell out of my chair when I heard this. When Jeffy, the guy says, well, what it boils down to is the government offers better health care than we do, so we encourage our workers to take advantage of a better health care opportunity.
Well,
yeah, I wanted to scream at that one.
I'll tell you a little. Was you finished?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, yeah.
I'll tell you a little study I was going to, if I had time this evening, that I was going to do that I believe would make a really strong point, is go on your computer and Google Ford profits GM profits,
mm-hmm.
and figure out what their yearly profits are, and then figure out how many total employees is in each one of those companies, and then figure out how much, like say if they made $100 billion and had 1 million employees, you'd have a certain amount of employee to profit ratio, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd establish a proportionate relationship.
And GM and Ford gives great benefits, right?
Well,
those are 50,
yeah, because
$30, $35, $40 an hour men and retirements and pensions, and that's what puts them at a bad disadvantage with them Japanese and these other guys, because I've seen things that say, like, GM spends $1,800 out of each new car on employees and retirees' benefits, and Japan's only going like $100. That's a whole other thing. Now,
yeah.
See, and then if you go and look at Walmart's $300 billion a year profit and the amount of employees they have, and look at their employee-to-profit ratio, how much each employee grosses, you know what I mean?
Right.
I bet you Walmart makes more profit per employee than GM or Ford is right now.
No, I'm almost certain of it.
Now, if GM and Ford can afford it, why can't Walmart?
Right, because
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and it extends, Jeff. It extends to the goods that they sell, because the argument is that American workers can't compete with Chinese goods. But the only way that the Chinese goods and the third world goods become more competitive than American ones is by virtue of the fact that the Chinese workers aren't paid diddly. You know, we know for a fact that you can buy a union-made, American-made polo shirt, for instance, at or below the price that it's being sold for in Walmart. The only difference being that the profit margin between the price at Walmart and their production cost is far broader than what it is for the American workers.
And I'm not real big
on... So that means it's pure greed.
I'm not real big on government intervention and things, but like I said last night, that sometimes things people don't do the right thing. And if we, you know, we've already let all of our textiles, a lot of our auto, our steel, you know, we're letting all them kind of the good jobs, the good benefited jobs leave,
mm-hmm.
and we're left with what we got here in Beckley. And if these guys won't provide health insurance and benefits to their employees, maybe they need a little bit of encouragement. And because if they don't, every job in the United States, well, maybe not every, but 90% is a very believable and realistic number, that one day 90% of the jobs in this country might not have no health insurance and benefits and retirement plan.
And pay next
unless
to nothing.
Unless you pay into it yourself. And so anybody can have one of them kind of retirement plans.
Well, there's an interesting article I mentioned at the top of the show from the Harvard Crimson by Yoshi Tsurumi, who was a professor of George Bush's. Never mind what he said about George, but what he says about...
I can just barely hear you again.
What he says about the robber baron culture and its relation to Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations is well worth the read. Go to the online edition of the Harvard Crimson and look for Hail to the Robber Baron. And,
Hail to the Robber Baron.
Yeah, read what he has to say about robber baron culture. And it's a lot of what you... It's similar to what you just said. We got to roll out of here, Jeff.
Okay, thanks.
Later. All right, time for our top-of-the-hour news update, followed by a little bit more of fun with Screw the West Virginia Consumer. Why not? It's so enjoyable. They just spent a legislative session doing it. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
Hey, Buckethead, you going out less? Stretch your entertainment dollars by visiting a library in the newly formed Mountain Library Network. One card travels with you to libraries in 16 West Virginia counties. Stop by a participating library to sign up for your new card and to check out the benefits. Many libraries, one card does it all.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Scattering of showers during this evening will give way to a partially clear after midnight sky with a low around 44. Seems a little chilly for April, but nonetheless, April is a month of change, so we'll anticipate improvements after sunrise tomorrow. A Saturday high of 63 feels pretty good with a mix of clouds and sunshine. Clear 42 tomorrow night, becomes 72, mainly sunny by Sunday afternoon, and the next chance of rain not until Tuesday.
WWNR Beckley.
He's got a brain, and he's not afraid to use it. Literally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. Let's continue with the Bend Over West Virginia report. This is another beauty. This bill passed the House, I presume, today. It's a measure. Oh, brother. A measure that would have West Virginia consumers pay the full cost of installing environmental controls at power plants owned by what this report calls, and I quote, struggling utilities.
Struggling utilities.
We're struggling. We're struggling. So, Senate Bill 455 would allow utilities ranked below investment grade to apply for a plan to make you and me start paying for upgrades, environmental upgrades, while the scrubbers are being installed. You gotta understand how these creeps think. These are called environmental controls. What we're talking about are scrubbers. And it's designed, you see, to make people look up and go, well, if we're going to pay for it, we don't want it. It's not fair to make us pay for them environmental controls. And thereby to turn West Virginians against any idea of looking down the road toward our own kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, children undreamt of, toward their future. For instance, one of those struggling utilities.
Oh, we're struggling. We can barely crawl on flat ground. We're struggling. We're a utility and we're struggling.
One of those struggling utilities is Allegheny Energy. And they want to tack $3 a month for 15 years onto every customer's bill so that they can secure a bond to pay for the work on its 1,100-megawatt Fort Martin Power Station near Morgantown. Now, Allegheny says they need the guaranteed funding from us, from West Virginians, so that they can get an optimal credit rating. And Allegheny Energy, one of those struggling energy companies, they say that without that securitization... Watch the birdie. Look at the language. Without the securitization. Mabel, what the hell's securitization? Don't know, honey, but it looks like it's about $3 a month on the bill. That the less favorable loan conditions and interest could more than double the $400 million cost for the four-year project. Bug spray. Bug spray. This is a con. This is to try to get you to apply a little pressure on Allegheny Energy's behalf so that maybe they wouldn't even have to. We hate clean air. Please, won't you let Allegheny Energy put a little more filth into the air? Anything rather than put $3 on my power bill. So let me see if I've got this straight. With the workers' comp boondoggle, the power company gets to pass a rate increase along to us without even so much as saying howdy to the Public Service Commission. And now your elected representatives have decided that you need to pay an extra $3 a month if you're an Allegheny Energy customer. You need to pay an extra $3 a month for the next 15 years. Let's see, that's 15 times 36 is 15 times 36. Oh. Hell, I'd have to take my shoes off. These people got a lot of nerve. I've come to the conclusion that the legislature and our elected officials know exactly what you and I are good for. Our votes. And in an election year, they will kiss our feet. They will tell us that we are the best thing since sliced bread, sunshine. To get that vote. But after the election's over, well, you know how it goes. We're not so valuable anymore. But by God, in another year or so, we'll be valuable again, won't we? Or a couple of years, if it's a four-year term. Oh, they'll love us to death in a few more years. It's the being neglected in the middle that I kind of object to. Utilities ranked below investment grade. There's another question.
Why are they ranked below investment grade? Is that our fault, too? Is that our fault to the tune of $3 a month for the next 15 freaking years? Is it? Or could it be bad management? Could it be poor business decisions? Screw it, Bob. Give them their $3 a month for the next 15 years. West Virginia's open for business, baby! I'm sorry. I'm burnt out. Here, let me lean across here and see who's on the phone. Who's there? Got anybody? Who've I got? Yo, hello? Well, you'll have that. My apologies. Kind of had to, you know. You try running a board upside down. Sorry. Do you ever feel like your heart's going to break? Because I'm beginning to get a little bit of that feeling. And it doesn't have so much to do with politics as it has to do with, well, I don't know if you heard Paul early in the show talking about we haven't taught civics for 30 years. And I got to think, yeah, about 28 years. 25 years. And we gave up on civics. Well, I'm kind of an idealist. And I took that civics stuff pretty seriously. Made a very good grade in the class, I might add. And it meant something to me. The Constitution meant something to me. The idea of a nation of laws. The idea of a republic. A res publica, the public thing. It meant something. And when you look at that bold inscription at the top of the document, and it says, "We the people." You know, it doesn't say "we the corporations." It doesn't say "we the stockholders." It doesn't say "we the coupon clippers." All right, let's try this one more time. Yeah, who've I got?
Chris.
Hey, Chris.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm sick. I'm disgusted. Yeah, what?
Well, I've got a something positive for you.
Okay. Help me.
Help you? I can barely hear you.
Okay. That's the third time. Crank it up. Better?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
On my blog, I just posted my interview with Judy Bunt.
Okay.
And let me tell you, if anybody wants a reality check outside of West Virginia on what's going on in the coal mining world of West Virginia, read this interview.
Okay, and the address to that blog?
TheMantzelReport@blogspot.com.
Okay, it's TheMantzelReport@blogspot.com?
Yeah.
Okay. Not TheMantzelReport.blogspot.com.
No.
Okay.
Or they could, you can email me at mantzelreport@aol.com, and I'll send you the link, or I'll send you the interview.
Okay, on the blog address, is it the?
Yeah.
And that's Mansell with one L.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Judy's a fabulous, hard-working firebrand, and on that issue, I don't know how my friends down at Coal River Mountain Watch go from day to day sometimes.
Well, I tell you what, Judy, if you're listening, Judy, I just thank the world of you, sweetheart, and I really appreciate this. We've been emailing this back and forth for about 2 weeks now, and she has really poured her heart out on her feelings into this.
Yeah, she doesn't hold back. I mean, and
she doesn't,
and she can't afford to.
No, she can't. No, she can't.
We can't afford to.
She sure can, and I thank you so much for introducing me to her. And I just think I tell her all the time when I email her that I just wish to goodness I lived up there so I could volunteer and help her out somehow.
Well, I think you just did.
Yeah, I think I did. But I tell you, she's really something. world, I tell you, the world is can be a really dark, humiliating, and just loathsome place. You look at the news every day, but you have someone like you who's doing their very best to put on a great show and talk about the issues. Not just the headline on the front page. You go and look for what's really going on and talk about it. And these great listeners you have in West Virginia are just extraordinary, too. They talk about the issues, they call up, and they're informed. They know what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm lucky.
You're very lucky. And something like what you're doing is so needed.
Well,
you know this.
Oh, Lord, yes. Maybe someday we can grow this that way a little bit. I don't know. Of course, you know, that it's hard to convince somebody to let progressive radio get started, but then it goes like wildfire once it does.
Absolutely.
Because there's a hunger out there, Chris. There's a hunger for something besides bought and paid for miserable right-wing propaganda, you know, which is what most AM news talk stations run. I don't know if you realize it, but this station right here has about more live programming than any other AM talk station in the state. You know, here we are sitting in little old Beckley.
Live talk, not just beamed in from somewhere.
Right, exactly. You know, we cook it here.
Yeah, the people that live there drive in their car, walk in there, and get on the microphone and talk to people.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's what you need.
And see, the fun part is that one of the best compliments I get, and we get it a lot, are these people who are out on the road driving through. You know, they got Ontario plates on their car, they got New York plates, Michigan plates, Ohio, whatever. Yeah. And they'll be zooming through, and they'll hear a little bit of the show, and they'll call in and say, "Where's that guy out of?" And John or Taylor will say, "Oh, right here. He's right across." No, no.
He's sitting right there. I'm looking at him.
Yeah, and that's kind of inspiring. But you know, after and I guess, is the legislature still in session in Alabama?
Honestly, I don't keep up with it that much.
I can understand why.
I'm looking around the world.
At this point, you know, it ends at midnight tomorrow night, you know, Saturday night, Sunday morning. And at this point, Chris, I feel like a boxer who's gone 15 rounds.
15 rounds and the cut doctor had it in for you.
Yeah, and got no cut doctor.
Got no cut doctor, yeah.
I got no cut doctor and the other side's bought off the ref. You know,
well,
kidney punch.
Yeah. About 10 minutes ago, I'm sure you covered quite a bit. Did you get to the bit about the Pope?
Yeah, and what he thought of George Bush.
Yeah.
But as Jim noted, he certainly must have had. If that's true, he must have had a change of heart because he helped him get reelected.
Yeah.
So,
you know, politics and money are like that.
Yeah, and both sides have plenty of both.
I'm sure. Hey, I miss Jim's call. I always like to hear his calls.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know. There was just something going on when I came in today, Chris. And I mean, this isn't me just engaging in some sort of the. Like I said, I feel like I've been in a fight.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I came in today, found out that the third party bad faith bill that, you know, you've heard me talking about that for a couple of weeks, that passed.
Oh, goodness.
And I was just, you know, I was just now talking about these power companies that are going to pass a little more cost on to us. And do we get anything?
You know, we had the same thing happen down here with EBA.
Sure.
Yeah, we've had that before. We're going to make all these improvements. We're going to give you better service, and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, and in this particular
down here, every year in January, and well, in Christmas time, everybody's scared to death to spend too much for Christmas, because there used to be for years every January, if your utility bill was about $300, January would be $500 or $600 or $700 every year, and they haven't done it the last 2 years.
Well, I just feel like we can't get a break. You know, I'm sick and tired of being told on the one hand, I mean, I know the Republican Party for what it is, Chris. Okay? And I know that there's no redeeming it. It's owned, it's controlled by Bush Co. and Delay Inc. And
well,
don't...
we've talked about this for a long time, Bob, on the air and privately off the air. We know what's wrong.
Yeah.
We know it's wrong. We know that what they're doing is wrong. And we know the answers for it. We know how to fix it. And they know how to fix it. And they still keep doing this. And people still keep sending them to the White House. They keep electing them.
The White House, the Congress. The people of Sugar...
You know, more harm is done. More harm is done in the Congress than the Oval Office.
Well, sure. And that's what the survey that Gene sent me the article about. And, you know, Americans are so disgusted with Congress, they've only got a 39, the Republican-controlled Congress only has about a 39% approval rate.
What is Bush? Is it like 44, 45?
42, something like that, yeah, 44. Maybe it is 44. But the Congress is around, you know, 37, 39. And yet, we're disgusted with them, and in a year's time, in the places where it really matters, we'll have more, you know, it'll be more about gay marriage.
Yeah.
It'll be more about the Ten Commandments until we rise up and just rat slap them and say, don't ever talk about that again. If you want to unseat somebody, bring an issue. But those aren't
exactly,
the ones.
Exactly. They're talking more and more about, well, Hillary's moving to the middle of the road. She's getting ready for her run.
Oh.
And Bill Frist is doing this.
Yeah, Bill Frist is out there, you know.
We don't have...
diagnosing people on videotape, oh my God.
Like we've said, Kucinich is the only one that has anywhere near like the Grand Old Party. Has those kind of ideas that says, look, I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
I'm not a Republican. I'm not a neocon. I'm not a middle of the road. I'm a Democrat. Spell it with me, Democrat.
Yeah. Be one. Stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're going to love this one. I did find this story. I was thinking about you and my other friends down there. Apparently, your governor's in some hot water right now, Chris.
Oh, Lord.
Because it's just one
I
of those.
I hope they turn it up and cook
them. No, Bob Riley's in hot water because he issued the annual... proclamation that the month of April is Confederate History and Heritage Month in Alabama, and when he issued the proclamation, they forgot to add the paragraph saying that slavery was the cause of the Civil War. Okay, and it tickled people to death. The Confederate Heritage Fund jumped up and down and said, yay, finally, free at last, free at last. And then the governor, somebody pointed out to the governor's office, they reissued the proclamation with the paragraph in it that says, it says that our recognition of Confederate history also recognizes that slavery was one of the causes of the war, an issue in the war, it was ended by the war, and slavery is hereby condemned. And boy, didn't that get the Republicans mad.
Condemned all of a sudden.
Yeah, this guy, Broxton, from the Confederate Heritage Fund, he said, Roy Moore will get all the Confederate vote for governor now in primary.
Like he wasn't going to in the first place. You know, the neo-Nazi bigot redneck vote, he was going to get that anyway.
I just love the idea that a Republican running for governor in the state of Alabama has to worry about losing the Confederate vote. Or wait a minute, let's take it the next step, Chris. I'm amazed that there is a Confederate vote.
Yeah.
I thought that's what the war was about. I didn't know there were any Confederates left. I thought we were all Americans now. Guess not.
Every time. You lived in Alabama for a while.
Oh, long time, yeah.
And people of Alabama, the good Democratic liberals like us, you know, we're sitting here going, you know, every time Alabama gets in the world news, turn the national news.
It ain't good.
It ain't good.
Well, that's, you know, the only reason they ever talk about West Virginia is the same thing. You know, we get George Bush standing up at the Bureau of the Public Debt, taking a pee on the idea that the United States honors its financial obligations and scaring the whole world to death.
I worked for a guy when I worked at Lowe's years ago, I worked for a guy. Almost every other night, I worked overnight, stuff on the trucks and stuff. Almost every night, he would say, man, I tell you what, best thing I ever seen was when Bull Connor turned the dog switch on.
God almighty.
Every night. And we had a black guy working with us. He was there right in front of him.
I know.
And it was just ridiculous. I asked the guy, I said, I don't know how you put up with this. He said, jobs are hard to find. Now, that is awful. That's democracy for you.
Yeah, and that dude, if he's still alive, the guy that said that about the Bull Connor, you know which way he votes.
Oh, of course. Of course, he talks about it all the time. I have to sit there and listen to it.
There's some heartbreaking stuff out there, Chris, and you know, I don't know.
Republicans, conservatives have no tact. I've looked at your board, the board on your website.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats on there behave yourselves nicely.
Oh, I know.
And the conservatives, that's where you get the foul language. That's where you get the, oh, yeah, well, by God, you know.
Oh, I know. We've got one scumbag out there calling another listener a whore on the board right now, and I'm extremely angry about it.
You know, I noticed on there that I have people saying stuff about me. Oh, guess what? I feel so threatened.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my goodness. Dear me, what will I do?
But, you know,
hiding in your little room, typing little hate speech on your computer.
With one hand. I know. Hey, Chris, thanks so much, man. You have a great weekend, all right?
I hope you hang in there. My love, Dad.
All right, thanks. Bye. Later. I feel a little bit better. All right, bottom of the hour break. Phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. I don't mean this to be like a personal therapy session or anything, but I don't know. Sometimes, hell, you know it. You live every day. You pay your bills. If you pay attention, some days you're going to have bad days. Some days it's going to be tough to get through. But you know what? You wake up the next morning and you say, damn it, this just means I got to fight a little bit harder. That's what we got to do. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A Fayette County man remains in serious condition after an accident on his motorcycle Wednesday night. Sheriff's deputies say Ronald Blaine Smith of Mount Hope was traveling south on State Route 41 near Leyland when he apparently ran off the road. Witnesses say Smith went over the end and the bike came down on top of him. Smith was health netted to CAMC. His condition today updated from critical to serious. Deputies say Smith was wearing a helmet. The accident remains under investigation by the Fayette County Sheriff's Office. The House of Delegates will vote today, or rather the House of Delegates voted today on a bill that would allow insurance companies to drop homeowners, increase rates on businesses without prior approval, and pay out less than a policy's face value in some cases. State Insurance Commissioner Jane Klein says Senate Bill 30 would ultimately lower rates for West Virginia consumers and employers. West Virginia's largest teacher union is getting a new leader. Next month, members of the West Virginia Education Association will vote for a new president. Current President Tom Lang is stepping down at the end of his current term on June 15th. The State Ethics Commission has dismissed an ethics complaint against former State Senator Mike Ross. The commission says Ross did not benefit directly from a deal in which he voted to spend state funds that would promote a golf tournament on a course with financial ties to his company. West Virginia Supreme Court has agreed to consider an appeal of a ruling that upheld Charleston's $1 a week service fee. By a 4-1 vote, the justices decided today to consider if a Kanawha County Circuit judge was correct when he ruled last year that the fee was not a tax because its purpose is to pay for services and not to fund government. For the rest of this evening, partly cloudy, temperatures in the mid-50s. Tonight, cloudy, then becoming partly cloudy and cooler. Low near 40. Tomorrow and Sunday, sunny both days. Tomorrow's high near 62 and Sunday's high near 70. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Paying too much at the pump? Is your monthly gas budget more expensive than your car payment?
Jeez!
If so, 40 miles per gallon on the highway must sound like a dream come true. Well, time to wake up and get to L&S Toyota. 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. We've got 35 Corollas available. And with 40 miles to the gallon on the highway, that makes Corolla one of the most fuel-efficient cars on the road.
Yes, 40 miles to the gallon.
All right! And Corollas aren't the only Toyotas that will give you more bang for your buck at the pump. Choose from 25 available Camrys with 33 miles to the gallon and 49 available Tacomas with 27 miles to the gallon. You won't just save money on your car. You'll save big on your gas bill with 35 Corollas, 25 Camrys, and 49 Tacomas available. What else can you ask for? L&S Toyota. Visit www.toyota.com for details. Sale ends 4/31.
Do you forget the names of the people you met last week, even the people you met last night? How would you like to be able to walk into a room, meet 50 people or more, and recall all their names instantly? I'm America's Memory Master, Matthew Girk, and I'll show you how to do it in the Memory Switch System, the fast, easy memory improvement technology for busy people who are embarrassed by their bad memory. In the Memory Switch, I'll show you how to recall names, dates, facts, figures, numbers, even business and technical data in a split second, and remember it for years. I'll show you how to lock information you see, hear, and read into your memory so you can recall it right when you need it for as long as you need it. Give me just one short hour, and I'll help you improve your memory so dramatically people will notice. Call now and try the Memory Switch risk-free for 30 days. 1-800-634-7380. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-634-7380. 1-800-634-7380.
April 1805. Bison as far as the eye can see. An abundance of bald eagle. Meriwether Lewis.
July 1805. We beheld a great number of antelope, deer, and elk. William Clark.
Imagine if Lewis and Clark's journals continued long past the end of their journey.
June 1905. Beaver trapped out. Buffalo herd down to a scant few.
How would they describe their trail today?
August 2005. The river is silent.
Would they be pleased?
On a more pleasant note, the new interstate certainly makes the commute more manageable.
Or would they feel differently?
Something must be done to save what's left of this great place.
As we commemorate the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, consider what's been lost and what we can do to preserve what's left. Walk with them and see what you discover at www.lewisandclark200.org.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ag Council.
WWNR Beckley.
A man who just loves conservatives, baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Not to mention barbecue. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Listen, you probably deserve to get your money back for tonight's show. I apologize for the moaning and groaning and weeping and wailing. I really do. I think the third-party bad faith thing was part of what got under my skin. And just watching this legislature, I've come to the conclusion that the electorate of West Virginia, the best analogy we could use for ourselves would probably be that of an abused spouse or an abused child. You know, that weird mindset you get into where it's all about, you know, why don't they love us? Why don't they do anything for us? Why don't they care about us? And somebody just looks at you and says, don't worry, honey, they'll love you again in a couple of years if you just do what they want to, what they want you to. That's it, isn't it? I mean, that's the way it goes down with abused spouses and abused children. You know, what can I do to make them love us? You know, in this case, what can we do to make them actually notice that we exist except in an election year? Damn. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're Head On. Thanks for calling.
Well, this is
something's been bothering me for quite some time.
Okay.
And, you know, I served 22 years in the military.
Well, you have mine and our thanks.
And I served in World War II, the 82nd Airborne, which I'm very proud of.
As well you should be.
And after I retired from the military, the late Sheriff Oakie Mills.
Yes, sir.
Come to me and he said, Jim, he said, I understand you are can operate heavy equipment and so on. I said, yeah, I can. And he said, we need you over to work for the state road.
Okay.
And Arch, well, and then Arch Moore got elected.
Okay.
And you know, I've had a lot of jobs, and I've done some good work and everything. And Arch Moore is the only man that has ever fired me from a job.
Really?
Yeah.
Any that particular?
Was, well, that's been quite a few years back.
I'd say.
But anyway, I have been trying to get compensation and everything from the VA. I've been working on it for 2 years. Where I've got shrapnel in both arms. I had my hands and feet almost frozen off in the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, my goodness.
And those people, they are absolutely running me around, denying me this, denying me that. And I'll tell you, it's absolutely mind-boggling.
I would say it's sickening.
It is sickening. And I feel so bad up here to this VA hospital here in Beckley. And they run you around like a bunch of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm still fighting it. And I'll be fighting it. And well, I'm 82 years old.
Well, Jim, don't you ever stop?
No, I will fight it until I draw my last breath.
Well, that's the lesson that your generation has tried to pass on to mine, and I don't know if mine got the message. You can never stop fighting.
Well, it's just like in the invasion of Holland. You know, I had a bad landing when we jumped into Holland.
Yes, sir.
I landed on the back of my neck and my shoulders and everything. And they said, well, we had a company medic with us. He said, well, Jim, I'm going to send you back to the rear. I said, like hell, you're going to send me back to the rear. I said, I come here to fight, and I said, I'm going to fight if I have to crawl.
God bless you, sir.
And
God bless
you. I picked up my rifle, and I went home.
Yes, sir.
And then from there, we was finally relieved from the campaign in Holland and was sent to back to Soissons, France to reorganize and everything. And then Christmas Eve, 1944, we was at Soissons, France, and they alerted us, and the Germans had broke through, and they loaded us up on trucks and taking us up to St. Vith.
Yes, sir.
St. Vith, Belgium. And that was where the main German force was headed. And we held there until our main outfit they moved back to Chateau Valets, Belgium, which was about 10 miles back.
Mm-hmm.
They left 12 of us up to fight a delayed action. That was on Christmas Eve, 1944. I'll never forget it.
Nor should we.
And we held until midnight. That was our orders. We had to hold regardless. And then we started moving back. And there was Lieutenant Thomas was a platoon commander. And we got back about 4 or 5 miles back, getting back to our main line of resistance. And Lieutenant Thomas and Private Gutierrez, they had saved my life in Holland. And I was pinned down, and they had come to my rescue. And they saved my life, and we moved back from, and we was on our way back, and Lieutenant Thomas and Private Gutierrez went down to this little village to pick up a guide to show us back, to get how to get back to our main line of resistance, and both of them were ambushed and killed.
Oh.
And always I go to bed at night and I can still hear Lieutenant Thomas hollering, "Get out of here, get out of here," and Private Gutierrez was calling for his mama.
Oh.
And, but we went we finally made it back to Chateau Valets, and we got set up and everything, and we turned Germans right there. We put them on the run.
Yes, sir.
And that's when it dropped down 40 below zero, and we spearheaded for Patton's Third Army.
Third Army, yes, sir.
And that's when I got my feet and hands frozen and everything. And all of this is on record, but you know, the VA denies me this, they deny that, and arthritis of the cervical spine, which was caused whiplash and that bad landing.
Right.
They still deny me of that.
Well, Jim,
I've been fighting those people for 2 years.
I tell you what, you deserve a lot more than the runaround you're getting.
I know, and you see, they finally give me a direct order. The Battle of the Bulge, there we had pushed so far, and we was just there, and they come around and they found my feet had busted open and was oozing blood and everything. And they gave me a direct order. I said, "Jim, you are getting out of ambulance now, and we are evacuating you." And they sent me back to 182nd General Hospital in Paris. And they soaked my feet and hands in some kind of solution. And they gave me 3 shots of penicillin every day, and finally started healing up. And what really irks me was a lot of those doctors and nurses, they'd go out partying and come in and I'll tell you, it was pathetic.
They didn't know there was much different war for them, wasn't it?
And also when I got so disgusted and everything, and I got healed up quite a bit, and I put on some oversized shoes and everything. I said, "Send me back to the front." "Oh, well, we was thinking about sending you back to the States." I said, "Like hell you are." I said, "I am going back to my outfit." And they they finally agreed and put me on a train, and my medical records and everything was put in a duffel bag. And I don't know what happened, but my duffel bag never did catch up with me, and all of those records was lost. And I keep telling these people, but they just don't understand.
No, and they don't try to.
And I've told some of them, you know, they said, well...
Well, can you imagine...
You don't have this, you don't... I said, where in the hell was you at whenever I was wading snow up to my waist out in front of Patton's tank, spearheading for him in the Battle of the Bulge?
One of my relatives was a prisoner of war and was liberated by Patton's Third Army when the when they overran the POW camps. You know, Jim, you deserve much more than what is than the runaround that is being given you. But imagine if you will, these poor young people coming back from Iraq. Do you know that there is a congressman out there right now who wants to redefine what a veteran is?
God, yes, yes.
Can you imagine that? He's decided that serving in the military isn't good enough, that he wants to make it a little bit tighter to keep people from getting the services that they need.
Oh.
And I don't think that's what you fought for, is it?
No, I'll tell you. You see, I wasn't drafted. I joined the Army in October 1st, 1940. I spent 5 years, 1 month, and 14 days in the Army in World War II.
Beginning to end.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of them, you know, they said, well, Jim, why did you come back to the front? I said, look, I said, I want to see this thing through to the end.
Exactly.
I said, that's the reason I joined the service and everything. And I said, I want to be in the military when this thing ends.
Well, I honor and I revere your service, Jim.
Thank you very much.
I thank you for sharing your story with us. And have you contacted your senators and your congressmen about your problem?
Yes, I've contacted Senator Rockefeller.
Well, contact Senator Byrd and make sure you contact Congressman Rahal, too.
Yeah.
Because they're very...
I live by myself now, everything. I live right here in Beckley.
Yes, sir.
On 110 Railroad Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I bought me a place here, and I'm just trying to do the best I can and everything. But I'll tell you this VA hospital up here, I don't know. Needs to be a congressional investigation or something.
Jim, it's
people out.
I hate to tell you this, it's not just this VA hospital. It is the system, and it is a VA system that has been their budget money has been gutted.
Yeah.
Money that we need for our veterans, whether they be Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, Grenada, Panama, or the first Iraq War, or this one, they do not have what they need, and as a consequence of that, they have to put people through runarounds like what you're getting, and it is a shame, and it is a disgrace upon this nation, Jim.
Well, you know, I served in when the Korean conflict broke out, I went back in the Air Force. I quit my job and joined the Air Force. I spent time in Vietnam, in Thailand and Vietnam, and I was exposed to Agent Orange, which they just,
right. And, more runaround.
Oh, yeah, the big runaround. And I have this breaking out all over my body and everything, and they say, oh, well, that's, so-and-so.
Yeah.
But we serviced, I was an aerospace ground equipment maintenance technician, and they would ship a lot of that stuff in from Da Nang and and we had to repair them, and with the we had the F-105s flying out of Thailand, and if one of them get hit and go down in at Da Nang, I had to load a crew up on the C-130 and go over there and repair battle damage so they could fly that F-105 back into Thailand.
Mm. Well, Jim, please don't give up your fight, and let us know how it goes. And by all means, contact Congressman Ray Hall, contact Senator Byrd, and don't let up on Senator Rockefeller. You've got sometimes.
I'm not gonna let up. I've been laying off to see to contact Senator Byrd I can only do so much and everything, and living here by myself, have to take care of this home and everything. And
I understand.
I'm kind of handicapped, but I'm not going to give up.
No,
and,
sir.
Bob, it's been nice talking to you.
It's a real pleasure talking to you, Jim, and I hope we can chat again sometime.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and you have a nice weekend.
You too, sir, and I look forward to talking to you again. And again, many, many thanks for the service you gave this, our country.
Well, I would like to sometime get with you and talk to you personally.
Well, I think that I don't see why that couldn't happen.
Well, you're welcome to come here to my house. I'm here by myself, and 110 Railroad Avenue.
All right, I'll see what I can do, Jim.
I would deeply appreciate it, and I've got some World War II trinkets and some pictures and things.
That would be something magnificent to see. I tell you what, I'll see about dropping by.
Well, I would. Oh, that would please me so much if you would, Bob.
It would be an honor.
Let me call me and let me know when you're coming so I can be here.
Okay. I tell you what. Let me put you on hold and let my producer John Kepi get your information. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Your rock meal. We've only got a couple of minutes, but I wanted to make sure I got to you, your rock meal. How are you? Hey.
I still say that maintain that our teacher walks amongst men is one of the most animals.
I can't just.
I don't care.
I know.
I just went for a walk today.
Yeah.
Along the river, watching cars go by. I wonder, as smart as these people look, how much smarter they are than a bunch of chimps. I'm serious.
I know.
And I did. The other voice there didn't come through too clearly, but just another example. Just we're all going to get stung by the scorpion.
Yeah.
And you say fascist, beginning of the program, say fascist. You don't need to say fascist. Just say Republican.
They've come to mean the same thing, haven't they, your rock mill?
Well, ever since Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Ever since Ronald Reagan. I really called you to talk about the Pope. You see, people don't understand my problem. As a human being, things on the level of a monkey. What kind of human development are we going to have? With all this papal voodoo, they want changes in the church, but they don't want to change their level of humanity where they still believe that God has a mother. Mary Motherhood. They still want to rattle the same rigmarole every day. Oh, Mary, Mother of God, pray for sinners now and at the hour of death. Oh, the sentimentalities. These pumpkin-headed hobgoblins. Pray the statues of Peter the Apostle. I mean, these people think the same way primitive people thought thousands of years ago, when they hardly crawled out of the caveman stage.
Well, I guess one of the things that I keep saying, Yerachmiel, is that we tend to focus too much on death as opposed to what the meaning and the actions in the life. Does that make sense?
Meanings?
And the actions of the life.
The life.
Right. In other words,
don't we learn something from it, you think?
Yeah, well, we would be better off to spend more time studying the life of Christ than the death of Christ.
Oh, yeah, well, the crucifixion is the climax